Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's our Saturday two-hour look back at the preceding week and what a weird situation it's been. And it's, what am I saying? That's a foregone conclusion. That's a given. Times are very strange. Times are very weird. What is that old Chinese curse? May you be a person of importance during interesting times. And we have the interesting times. All we need are some leaders willing to step up and be those people of importance there. Before we get into the show here, I just wanted to comment. I was watching MSNBC, which I tend to watch for the current political propaganda. And I guess they're feeling the budget crunch as well, because just at the top of the hour here, they stopped doing their news coverage and they just started running this documentary on, you know, why the death penalty is good, bad, or indifferent. I didn't watch it long enough to get the take on it. I am, of course, as you've already heard before many times, I'm opposed to the death penalty, because the way it is currently carried out with all the endless appeals, the deterrent value really isn't there. We have people who are going to die of old age on death row before they're actually executed. And, of course, until we can absolutely guarantee that no innocent people are being wrongfully convicted, we shouldn't be killing anybody. If you've sent somebody to jail on bad evidence or prosecutorial misconduct, you can always let them out, give them a little money to kind of get their life back on track. You can't give them back their youth, unfortunately, but at least you can let them out of jail and correct to some extent. Once you execute somebody and you find out you had the wrong guy, you know, there's no way to give life back to that person. And until we can give life back to people who shouldn't have been executed, we shouldn't be executing anybody at all. And the government doesn't like to admit they make mistakes, but they definitely do. Oh, okay. Matt in the control room, who's answering the phones today, we've already got a caller calling from the United Kingdom. So let's go to the phones. And Ian, aloha, welcome to the show. And I understand you want to talk about the MP scandal.
Yeah, I'm Mike. It's Ian, otherwise known as Eanie Mac. On the chat.
Ah, okay.
Hi there. Yeah, I just thought I'd give you a quick call and say, you know, I really appreciate the coverage that you're actually giving to with linking to the stories about the UK MP's expenses scandal. It may only affect the UK at the moment, but hopefully it'll get a lot of other people in other places thinking seriously about what their own politicians are up to, where
exactly
the money's going to. I've certainly noticed over here there seems to be a groundswell of opinion which seems to be building week upon week. People openly calling for these people to be prosecuted now, not only allowing them to step down, but, you know, let's get them out now, not wait until the next election. These are criminals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you've got a healthy economy and times are good and people are feeling well-fed and they've got, you know, an appropriate level of toys and they've got a comfortable life, I think people sort of figure a certain amount of political corruption is sort of a luxury that they can afford at that point. But right now in the Great Britain and certainly in the United States as well, you know, people are struggling. You know, we're here in the United States, most Americans are making, you know, just about half of what they were making a year ago, 56%. That's how much earnings have fallen in the United States. And I presume it is somewhat similar there in Great Britain. Times are very hard there. And then you look at your leaders on who've made these decisions that have ruined your economy, and you find out they're just looting the public treasury in all kinds of ways, shape, and forms. That has to be very, very angering. And as you point out, the main reason I'm covering the story here in the United States is we need to start taking a look at the expense accounts of the Congress, because I'm not going to presume that your politicians are any more dishonest than our politicians. I'm a great believer in equality. I think they're all equal crooks, and we need to start looking at that here in the United States.
Ain't that the truth? No, it's good to see it covered. It's good to see it getting a wider audience. As I say, there's definitely seems to be a groundswell of opinion now, week upon week, and it is building. So, it's, you know, it's good to see where it's going to go from here. If, you know, if things get worse, I really think it's going to, you know, long term, it's going to be a good thing. Short term, there may be some pain there for the people, but I think the time has come. It has. You know, we've got to address these things.
It has to. I mean, you've reached a situation where, you know, a crisis is there, the conflict is there. I'm seeing the word revolution being used, at least at the moment, metaphorically in the British press in several places. But I do want to share a piece of information with you because I have been to London. One of the most frustrating experiences of my life was having only 4 hours to visit the British Museum. But I did stop by the Tower, and that large wooden block is still there. And you might want to keep that in mind in the coming weeks.
Yes, I've seen that. That's already noted.
Okay, good. So you're way ahead of me on this one. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot for your time, Mike. Nice speaking to you.
Nice speaking to you. Thank you very much for the call all the way from Great Britain there. All right, that was Ian there. And, yes, this is a situation we should be taking a closer look at here in the United States. Because we're not going to pretend that our politicians are any more or less honest than any other politicians of any other country. And if the members of parliament are ripping off the British people to such an extent, prudence demands that we assume the same thing for our government, which we know has been lying to us and is committing torture and all these other war crimes. So lining their own pockets out of the public treasury by rigging and gaming the system has to be in there as well. And I find it very informative, if you will, that our corporate media, despite being prodded by numerous observers within the blogosphere, the corporate media refuses to make this connection and start looking at this. Of course, the corporate media doesn't do investigative journalism anymore. They basically accept their talking points from the government and present them as news. And as a matter of fact, just to give you an idea, an insight into the mentality of the corporate media here in the United States, not too long ago, when it became really obvious, irrevocably obvious, unquestionably obvious, that the U.S. government had lied about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, I went back to one of the local news people, and I attempted to verbally chastise them and say, do you remember back then, and you were reporting all this stuff as absolutely fact, and out here on the blogs, we were pointing out all the reasons to be questioning the validity of these claims that were being made. And this mainstream media drone came back and said, oh, but we were simply reporting what the government was saying. And from the look on this guy's face, that absolutely, he was convinced that was their job as corporate journalists, was to report what the government is saying. And it was just completely alien, any idea that they should maybe go out and take a look at the facts for themselves. And this ties in very much with this situation that we had this last week where Richard Gage of Architects for 9/11 Truth, if I've got that name correctly, went on a Fox affiliate, just one station, not the network, but a Fox News affiliate, and had a chance to present the evidence for a controlled demolition on 9/11. And what was amazing, and by the way, the TV station has been inundated with emails expressing their gratitude and appreciation for some honest coverage of 9/11, to the point where the station manager has said, please, don't email us anymore. You know, our mailboxes are jammed and we can't deal with it. But the point was, the talking heads on this Fox News affiliate channel not only did not belittle and smear and ridicule Richard, they very obviously from their faces were completely unaware that there was even a question about whether the official story of 9/11 was true or not. And I know here locally during the height of the anti-Iraq war protest, we were all handing out these little deception dollars. These are printed up in Canada. If you have not seen one, you can Google them. They're all over the place. And it's sort of an icon from the Bush years. And by now there's probably an Obama version as well. So the deception dollars, were handing them out, and I was talking to this lady who does the news at the local NBC affiliate, and I wanted to give her one, and she like stepped back like I had a snake in my hand and said, no, I can't touch that. If I'm seen with one of those, it's my job. And I think from all of this put together, we can basically come to the conclusion that most people working in the corporate media are almost living a cloistered life, that the world is only what their desktop computers are allowed to show them, a very heavily filtered view of the world, basically in terms of what the government wants them to see. That's what they will then report. And so that may be the reason why we're not seeing any investigative instincts from the media right now. And that's why all of the digging for these kind of scandals has to take place here on the blogs and on the alternative media like Genesis Communication Network. Okay, our phone number is 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room. We're taking your calls. We'll be back after these words from sponsors.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I'm trading some words with people in the chat room about about Great Britain, about beer and wine, and the suggestion was, you know, what kind of a wine and cheese party can you have in the current economic conditions? And of course, that's Thunderbird and Velveeta. So, turning to the economic news here. Okay. Turning to the news here, of course, the economic news really continues to be very, very bad. We're getting a lot of the rah-rah from the corporate media. CNBC, doesn't matter what happens. Meteor crashes through the building, buy roofing stocks. I mean, they're out there. They're just trying to get you to keep your money in the stock market and not go anywhere else. And they're trying to keep that all propped up, despite the fact that, in theory, the price of a stock is supposed to be based on its earnings, and American companies' earnings are continuing to decline, deteriorate. The Chicago Index shows that American business activity, it continues to contract. We know because of the 44% drop in federal income tax revenues in the last year that American workers and Americans as a whole are only making 56% of the money they were making a year ago. So there's a lot of gaming and scamming and going on out there in Wall Street where they're basically looting the taxpayers to throw money into Wall Street and the stock market and keep it all propped up and keep it looking good. And there are a couple of competing theories as to why they're doing this. But mostly, you know, greed is a big part of it. Political corruption is a big part of it. As I was telling Ian, we need to start taking a closer look at the expense accounts and finances of our Congress critters. Because if the MP have been getting away with it like that for all these years, then so has Congress. And if the corporate media is not going to look at it, then we have to. We have to start digging at it. So troubled bank loans have hit a new record high this last week. And, you know, looking back over the last several months, I think the inescapable conclusion here is the financial bailout has been great for everybody in the country except the American taxpayer. The TARP was passed last September with the claim to us. And remember, the American people overwhelmingly opposed using tax money to prop up these failing financial giants who basically created the mess themselves. As soon as Glass-Steagall was repealed by Congress in 1999, Wall Street went on a gambling binge. And when it was going up, they were all getting rich. And when it came down, they hit gambler's ruin. And the first thing they did is go back to Congress and say, we need help. We need money from the taxpayers to keep our little shops open. And basically that's what happened. And we were told that if we would just accept $100,000 in additional tax debt on every one of our heads, you know, $100,000 is hardly anything at all, is it? If we would just accept an additional $100,000 debt on all of our heads, that this would restore the credit markets and we could go back to living life the way we did before. And obviously, of course, that did not work out. We are $12.8 trillion into this bailout program and credit at the consumer level is absolutely drying up. And I think the reason for that is very obvious. The financial centers are smart enough to realize that if you're not bringing back those high-paying jobs that were shipped off to other countries, then the American people aren't going to be able to pay their bills. They're not going to be able to buy these new products. And they're basically pulling back from that. And it's an admission that we, the American people, are being abandoned right now by the government and the financial centers. We're being left to fend for ourselves. Remember when the Titanic was headed down and all the rich people got the lifeboats and all the poor people got locked down in steerage? Can you hear those gates slamming shut on you right now? Because that's exactly what's happening when companies like Advanta cancel their small business cards for everybody and say, oh, no more. You still owe us a bunch of money, but, you know, you can't use our service anymore. And and again, the root cause for all of this, and the reason why so many people think that the government is doing this deliberately for some reason, we'll get into that in a little bit, is the change to the tax laws that encouraged American companies to send their jobs overseas. And until those jobs come back, the economy is, in fact, doomed. Doomed with a capital do. Or a capital do-do. And that is an absolute reality. And I can't be the only person to understand that. We've got a government supposedly made up of the best and brightest and best-trained minds. They have to understand it as well. Certainly the financial centers understand that if those high-paying jobs aren't coming back, that it's very, very risky to extend any more consumer-level credit. And so all that money that got poured onto Wall Street and the banks and the financial industries, against our wishes, because remember, 90% of the phone calls to Congress last September were from Americans saying, do not use our tax money to prop up AIG and the automakers and the banks and the brokerages. And despite that, Congress did it and said, we're going to fix the economy this way, and you'll be able to refinance your homes, and you'll be able to get loans to start new businesses. And it didn't happen. It absolutely did not happen. $12.8 trillion into the hole. $100,000 for every one of you listening to this broadcast right now. $100,000 you are on the hook for. This is money you and your children will be forced to pay back to the Federal Reserve, for which you will receive absolutely no services whatsoever. And this is one of the biggest problems we face in America today. So much of our tax burden is debt repayment. We don't get anything back for that money. Except, of course, bombs and the hatred of the world. But the reality here is, you know, in other countries that have a high tax rate, you get health care, you get education through college, you get social services, you get good roads, you get hospitals, get good emergency services. You have a society around you that is taking care of you for that money. In the United States, we have the high taxes, and we have to pay for our own health care. We have to pay for our own education. It's all very expensive. We have to go into debt deeply to get an education to try and get a better job, which doesn't exist anymore, so you're getting rooked on that one. Medical costs are so high in the United States, medical bankruptcy is the leading cause of bankruptcy in this country. And the roads are shot. It's estimated here in Hawaii that the average cost per driver per year of damage to their car caused by the bad roads is about $600 a year per person. And in a way, it's a hidden tax. Because instead of paying taxes, you know, taking our tax money that's paid to the state to fix the roads, the state takes our tax money, uses it for debt reduction or their special little fluffy programs for the NEPets, and the roads deteriorate, we break our cars, and we have to go pay to repair the cars because of the failure of the government to manage our money well. We're going to go back to the phones. We've got Mr. Parrish talking about the Pacific Northwest economy. Aloha, Mr. Parrish. How about a first name?
My name's Jeff.
I'm sorry, one more time?
Jeff.
Jeff Parrish.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Rivero. How are you? Listen, the gig's up on this whole economic thing. I mean, they've got $12, $14 trillion printed up, thrown around. That's, you know, it's never going to get paid.
Jeff, sorry, timing really is bad here. I need you to hang on for just a minute. We're going to keep you through the break. When we come back from the commercials, I want you to pick up right where you are right now. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just trash yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far a 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking with Mr. Parrish about the economy. And before I put the microphone back over to him, I just wanted to comment, as we're looking through all these little news stories about how interest rates are being shoved up on those credit cards that aren't being canceled, mortgage rates are going up again. Does it really make sense in the overview of our economy for the interest on existing credit lines and debt obligations to be cranked up at the same time the median income of those people is falling? Or is it in fact simply making inevitable a huge financial crash down the road? And if that crash is inevitable, and it does seem to be, is this really by design of the government, in which case we ought to be getting our own large wooden block? Or are they just all stupid idiots in Washington, D.C. and Wall Street, in which case we should be getting that large wooden block? It does seem like we're in a no-win situation here. Anyway, to get back to Mr. Parrish, please pick up where you left off.
Yeah, well, to answer that question, I think this wasn't done by design. I think they just thought they could borrow and spend their way out of the problems. Tax, spend, borrow, and try to hang some other generation down the road for it. And now China is saying, hey, we want ours, and we're like, try to come get it. You know, I mean, China's got themselves in a pickle. They can't say no, or they could have themselves an uprising. 30 million people are already out of work, and more of them are showing up daily because we as consumers are tapped.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. China's economy was very much tied in with ours. And again, this is the biggest argument against globalism. And yet we keep hearing people like, you know, Alex Jones is still convinced that this whole economic disaster is designed to sell us a new global financial system and a global government to go with it. And yet it should be obvious to anybody paying attention. Globalism is what turned an economic crisis in the United States into a global disaster. And selling more globalism as the cure is definitely, that's not going to make any sense. It's like saying that we could save that Titanic if we back up and hit the iceberg on the other side of the bow.
Yeah, and the only thing I can see that we as citizens and states in general can do is they have to take their sovereignty and start printing their own money through their own treasury.
I agree.
No usury attached, of course.
Well, yeah, we have to go back to the system that made this nation an economic powerhouse, which is the U.S. Treasury issues the money. It is a unit of value, not a unit of debt. There's no interest or usury attached to it. And that's what made this nation so wealthy, which is why it became a target for predatory bankers who tried three times to get a central bank, privately owned bank, in charge of the public currency, which Thomas Jefferson warned us all against, and then in 1913 they succeeded in making it permanent with the connivance of President Woodrow Wilson. And we've had two presidents who've gone about issuing their own currency. They both wound up dead. It's been seriously proposed by Ellen Brown that Arnold Schwarzenegger could fix California's economy by issuing a California currency for internal use only, again, issued by the state government, not by a private bank. And, I think it's a very good idea. Obviously, the Federal Reserve System is going to, they're going to be fighting tooth and nail to prevent any suggestion that we might want to abandon their system. This is why we're looking at all this war in the Middle East. When they talk about a clash of civilizations, what they're really talking about is a clash of banking systems. And it is a war between this very predatory compound interest usury system that we have in the West that enriches the bankers and impoverishes pretty much every country it's ever been put to work in, versus the Islamic banking system, which is fee-based lending, no compounded interest. And, you know, a lot of people are paying attention right now that the Islamic banking system isn't suffering these huge recession, depression problems. They're having a slowdown because they were also linked to the Western economies. But they don't have the inherent problem built in, because the central failing of this debt-based currency system from a private bank is the instant it goes into operation, more money is owed than is actually in existence. And so this creates a very predatory culture where it's constantly expanding, constantly having to loan more, or constantly having to conquer other territories to bring their money into the system to keep the books balanced. And we've run out of new borrowers, and we've run out of countries that we can conquer that have got enough money to make it worthwhile. And, we're obviously in this conquering phase. We're in Iraq, Afghanistan, now we're going into Pakistan, definitely lusting after Iran's oil wealth. And, once you're on that path, we're talking World War III, because the banks don't want to give back any of their profits.
When you create money with usury attached, from the first dollar created, there's more money owed than in circulation. From the first dollar.
That's exactly my point.
And that's why we're finally morphed to where we are now, is because it's built up like a great big top-heavy pyramid. and it's got to come crashing down sooner and later. And
it does. When you're talking about all these trillions and trillions of dollars of debt that's out there, it's all this accumulated interest that's been passed from generation to generation to generation, and none of it is money that ever really existed. It's this numbers game of you owe us more money than we loaned to you, and the longer the government and banks can trick you into not paying back the principal, the more you owe. You know, one of the reasons the Federal Reserve is resisting this this push for a full audit is if the Federal Reserve is fully audited, the American people are going to find out they have already repaid the entire national debt several times over, just since the Vietnam years. The problem is the government and the Federal Reserve work together so that the federal government is only paying the interest. They never pay down the principal. And so we, the taxpayers, are constantly kept on that tax hook, wriggling and working our lives away and suffering reduced standards of living to make the member banks of the Federal Reserve rich beyond dreams of Midas. And the reality is, and the Federal Reserve will donate money to those congressional and presidential candidates who are willing to go along with that system. And they will absolutely, I mean, it's worse than AIPAC. They will absolutely destroy any candidate who's standing up there saying, you know, we might want to look at going back at the original monetary system of the United States government. And like I said, I find it rather interesting speculation that the two presidents who dared to print up their own currency and defy the central profit banks both wound up shot to death.
Yeah, well, you can talk about, you know, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates having money, but those people don't even hold a candle to the people that actually has the power to create money. When you start thinking about that, and I'm not talking just United States, Western banking goes clear around the world, and you start thinking about the few individuals that can actually create each currency for every country, that is huge power, ungodly amounts.
It absolutely is, and unfortunately, as we are seeing, it has mismanaged the planet terribly to the point where, you know, and what we've seen here in the United States, we're seeing on a global level. When the money gets pulled into this little tight pile around the very, very rich, and there's not enough left for everybody else, the system as a whole begins to break down. And
not to mention capitalism thrashes the planet from pole to pole. We have nothing.
Well, we're not capitalists anymore. Capitalism fails, it morphs into either Marxism or fascism. And somebody just sent me this wonderful little comment in the email not too long ago, which is the Democrats are calling the Republicans fascists and the Republicans are calling the Democrats communists, and unfortunately they're both right.
Yep. Absolutely. We have gone just to that. And I think it was Mussolini that says all capitalism either goes into communism or fascism. But it's usually fascism,
it was
corporate
Lenin
fascism.
Who said that. It was Lenin who said that.
Was it Lenin that said that?
It was Lenin who said that. Mussolini said that fascism should more properly be called corporatism because it is the teaming up of corporations and government to exploit the ordinary working people and to loot them. And he's absolutely correct about that.
Well, when you look at our military-industrial complex, pretty much calling all the shots of what goes on, that's pretty much fascism.
Oh, it is. I mean, we could revive the economy overnight and balance the books if we could just give up this addiction to going around the world killing brown people. I mean, that's where the big chunk of federal tax money is going right now. That's why we don't have good schools and roads and everything. We're too busy building bombs. Okay, we're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
The GCN Radio Network.
providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
When all this twist is still, what's left away? Did these remaining holes reveal what's really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And Jeff signed off from us during the break. And thank you, Jeff, for the phone call. Very cogent observations. I think pretty much everybody understands the fundamentals of what is going on. And I think a lot of people are beginning to simply ignore the chattering coming from the government and the financial industry and all the little papers they hold up to say, see, what we're doing is really legal and it's the right thing. And we've got all these charts that prove that the more money we take from you, the better the nation will be. And it's all snake oil. It really is. It really is snake oil at this point. I was watching in the chat room over the break here where people around the world, they're basically caught in the same situation. Their incomes are going down. The cost of living is going up. At some point, the two are going to cross. That's why we have a homeless problem. When there are enough angry homeless, we're going to start seeing bloodshed in the streets. If this is intentional, it is really stupid. We're being pushed by circumstances towards a confrontation with the government because more and more people are realizing government is the problem. It's not the solution. It's the problem. Somebody was asking me in email if I thought it's possible to still save the United States as we've known it. And my comment to that is the United States that I was born in is already dead and gone, and I'm already in mourning for that. As far as saving our current society, I'm not even sure we have a society. We seem to have a pen of humans who are being harvested and looted by the ultra-rich. But the bottom line is, no, the situation is not going to be changed peacefully because those who've got the money and the political power like the situation just fine because all the goodies are flowing toward them. And they've convinced themselves that whatever God it is they're worshiping intended it to be that way. And that anything they do to enforce God's will is therefore just and right. I mean, we've got George Bush, the man who insisted God told him to go out and attack Iraq. He's going out there now insisting that he was right to commit torture on people. Torture. I mean, how many of the Ten Commandments has this guy broken while claiming to be speaking for God or acting in God's behest? I mean, he's borne false witness, by saying that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. He's certainly been responsible for a lot of thievery and killing. He did it because he coveted his neighbor's property by claiming God told him to do all this stuff. I think that's taking the Lord's name in vain. I'm not 100% certain about that one. But, I mean, he's batting basically a 500 on this right now, on breaking the Ten Commandments. And for all I know, he's probably broken number 7 as well. And I don't really want to get in there because that's more for the supermarket tabloids. But the situation here is that for a guy who wraps himself in so much holiness and spirituality and religion, he's breaking all the rules. And for those who believe that there is a heaven and a hell, and who are following George Bush and supporting him, they're going to go right down to the dark regions with him. Which brings me to the next little story, where earlier today, CNN put out this story claiming that the vast majority of Americans do not want any further investigations into torture. Now, it is an important fundamental principle of propaganda that in order to work, it must be believable. And if you put out propaganda that is just so far outside the realm of possibility that people start laughing at it, then you failed as a propagandist. Because this poll is creating an image of the majority of Americans as perfectly happy with breaking half of the Ten Commandments or worse. And perfectly happy with the idea that if you're waterboarding and torturing prisoners of war, that it's going to happen to our own kids when they get captured by the other side. Now, I know that among the Americans I talk to on a regular basis, they're overwhelmingly appalled and by this torture scandal. They want more than an investigation. Some of them say we shouldn't let the government investigate anyway because they'll just cover it up, that there should be an independent investigation or even better, war crimes trials at The Hague. That's really where this should be handled. But this idea of this poll coming out and saying that the majority of Americans are perfectly okay with torture and it's no big deal, that is simply not believable because it paints a picture of Americans that I find to be insulting. It is an insult to the American character. It is an insult to the American ideal. It is an insult to the America that was created by the Founding Fathers back in 1776. And CNN is trying to tell you that the majority of you are all willing war criminals and willing sinners, and that you're perfectly happy following President Bush down to the dark regions for all eternity. That's what this CNN poll is trying to sell you. Now, I've put a similar poll up on my website, and right now, the last time I looked, something like 98% of the respondents want a full investigation of the torture. We have to have one. It's not an option. That's the thing that we've got to keep in mind. This is not optional under U.S. law. It is not optional under international law. Torture must be prosecuted. There are no extenuating circumstances. Those Justice Department memos are acknowledged to be legally invalid. They were stretching a point into an ellipse. And another important point you need to keep in mind. President Bush and Dick Cheney went to the Justice Department with the 24 scenario. There's an atom bomb in a city. We've got the guy who put it there, and we've got only 24 hours to get him to tell us where it is so we can save zillions of lives. Under that circumstance, is it legal for us to torture them? And the Justice Department memos came back and said, under that circumstance, yeah, we think it is. Now, the problem is that 24 scenario of the ticking time bomb in the city, that's a plot device from a TV show. So that we can say, oh, Jack Bauer is justified in torturing this Arab guy to give up the location of the bomb. It's a TV show. It's not the real world. It hasn't really happened. It's not reality. And we are learning that the torture that was carried out did not conform to those limits set within those Justice Department memos. Because the torture was used to extract confessions that were politically convenient. That's what it was used for. There was no ticking time bomb. Dick Cheney's trying to claim there is. Levin has come out, said he's read the memos that Cheney wants made public, and they don't say what Cheney says they do. So Dick Cheney is lying. He's probably scared. He realizes that if the political pressure continues to build, if the economy goes really bad, Obama will throw Bush and Cheney to the war crimes wolves to save Obama's own ass. He will do that. At some point, there will be enough pressure where Obama's going to have to make a choice between letting the war crimes trials go forward for Bush and Cheney and seeing the entire government brought down by a very angry and broke and hungry and enraged population who are confronting fully in the face that the government of the United States is not the one described and defined by the Constitution. So I'm not surprised Bush and Cheney are out there stumping and trying to campaign and say that they were right to do what they did. They can't deny it anymore. You know, it's impossible to deny it anymore. The paper trail is definitely there. So now they're trying to sell you the idea that what they did was good for the country and they really meant well and that they saved us all from Darth Vader and the death, I mean from Osama bin, well, from whatever it is they are imagining that they saved us from. But Senator Levin has seen the memos. He says it isn't in there. It is not in there at all. So, I'm not letting this torture scandal go away because this is the worst black mark on the soul of the nation in our nation's history. If Watergate was a cancer on the presidency, the torture scandal is a cancer on the entire government of the United States. You cannot, in good conscience, condone any of this stuff. You must be opposed to it if you are a true American and you support the Constitution of the United States. Because these tortures were used to extract confessions. The entire Iraq war. First of all, it was the weapons of mass destruction. We know they didn't exist. Then it was Iraq was involved in 9/11. We know that wasn't true. That was a complete lie. The entire cause to go into war, even knowing those other claims were false, rested on this idea that Iraq was aiding al-Qaeda. That claim rested on a single confession extracted under torture from a man who has now conveniently committed suicide and cannot be talked to again. We are just now finding out that the confession that solved the London 7-7 bombing was extracted under torture. We'll be back after the news and commercials with hour number two of the What Really Happened radio show. Stay tuned. Aloha, America.
Michael Rivero, What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Hour number two. We've got callers waiting on the line. We're going to go to Dave in California. Aloha, Dave. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind this morning?
Good morning, Michael. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you.
Well, I got something for you that ties in with the economy and with the torture issue, sort of. Regarding the economy, Schwarzenegger has just now proposed a bunch of massive budget cuts that are on fast track for approval and implementation beginning July the 1st. I've got a little bullet point list. I can fire them at you.
Please do.
Permanent cuts of nearly $2 billion to the Medi-Cal program, including dialysis, breast and cervical cancer treatment for women over 65 years. Read that, 55. Permanent elimination of the Healthy Families Program, providing health insurance for over 982,000 children under the age of 18 from working poor families. Radical reduction or permanent elimination for funding of in-home supportive services. These are the services that provide part-time helpers to people who only need a little assistance to live safely in their own homes, you know, like maybe a little cooking.
Yeah, I understand
shopping.
The program, yeah. My first father-in-law was under that program when I lived in California.
So. Yeah, and it's an excellent program. And it's three times less expensive than convalescent care.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so it prevents them from being warehoused. And there's a real problem with this one, and that is that currently there's only 30,000 available beds in convalescent care, and there's 440,000 recipients of in-home supportive care. So what's going to happen to those 410,000 people who have no place to go and can't live on their own, can't cook, can't do anything?
I'll tell you what Schwarzenegger is doing here, and we're going to see this from every state governor. We're going to see it from Washington, D.C. They are going to threaten to cut those services that we, the people, actually want. Okay,
right.
To scare us into saying, okay, we'll go back to paying the higher taxes that you demanded. What the Californians need to do is they need to, and remember, he's not really the Terminator. He can be hit and hurt, and he's not going to kill everybody who shows up in his office. That's just a movie part. Okay, what the people of California need to do is they need to basically give him the Gray Davis treatment, and they need to send a message to the California legislature that they want the budget under control, and they want the taxes lowered, and they want the spending cut in those parts that don't affect the California taxpayers. A huge amount of California's budget problems relate to, you know, the fact that Schwarzenegger wrote off that $8 billion that Enron owed them. There's all the money that is being spent for social programs for the illegal aliens. You heard that story a couple of weeks ago about students are suing the California university system because the illegal aliens pay less for their education than the legal residents of California. So there's a huge chunk of money right there that needs that could be cut right there. And of course, the big part of it is there's a lot of feather bedding spending that's going on. You know, we need to really look at that budget a little bit more closely as far as the federal level is concerned. There is so much of our money tied up with military and paying for the military and everything. That's where all the money is going. But the government, and Schwarzenegger is the first one to do it, they're going to like try and scare you that if you don't go along with their higher taxes, they're going to cut all these services that they know you care about. They're going to cut out the services that you want, that you pay your taxes for. They're not going to take the axe to the services that you wish would go away, that you don't want to be paying for. You know, and that's the dichotomy. That's the conflict between the people and the government. The government isn't representing the wishes of the people anymore. The government has gone rogue. They want your money, and they're just going to keep on grabbing it. And Schwarzenegger's, but that bullet list of yours, it is a scare tactic. It is designed to scare that part of California, which are dependent and helpless, and get them to sign on saying, yes, tax the rest of California. I've got to have my care. And it's politics at its dirtiest. It really is. And I got to tell you, I have lost so much respect for Arnold Schwarzenegger because, you know, I've actually met and worked with him on the film side. And he's a fun guy. And he's very intelligent. He can crack jokes in a foreign language, which is very difficult to do. But since getting involved with Ken Lay and politics, my respect for him has just gone right down the tubes. For him to be playing this kind of cheap political game with people in California who are dependent on the government right now, you know, that is just tacky. There is so much in the budget that could be cut without impacting quality of life for the Californians.
Yep.
And absolutely, his bullet list, it's not even subtle. It is just an absolute attempt to scare Californians into making do with less so the government can have more.
Well, would it be helpful for me to quote a few more of the things that are
Please
being
do.
Targeted? Okay.
Please do.
Permanent elimination of multi-purpose senior services program. That's the senior resource centers, meals on wheels, adult day health care centers. Permanent elimination of state funding for Indian health, rural health services development, and expanded access to primary care. Permanent elimination of maternal, child, and adolescent health care programs. Permanent elimination of the CalWORKS program, which is California's welfare to work program. That includes hundreds of thousands of children and parents who have special needs and disabilities and work. And also reduce funding for the AIDS drug assistant proposals, permanent elimination of epidemiological studies and surveillance. We wouldn't want to know how many people are actually dying from this, would we? Limiting the formulary in the AIDS drug assistance program, reducing and permanently eliminating other HIV/AIDS programs such as counseling and therapy, therapeutic monitoring program, and home
and community.
And
you know what the irony here is? You know what the irony here is? When they cancel all these programs, they're going to put a lot more people out of work.
Absolutely.
And so the tax base is going to decline even further.
Yep.
And so it is. It's absolutely insane here. All right, well, listen, Dave, we got to let you go. The phone calls are piling up here, and we're going to switch over to Thomas in Arizona. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, the only thing worse than the pathetic state of the torture situation we have is the pathetic stupidity of the American people. It reminds me, when you go back into the days of Flip Wilson, there was a track on one of his albums, The Devil Made Me Do It. It was about King Begonia. And he would stand out on his balcony. He would say, "He who has nothing shall have less, and that which he has shall be taken from him." And the subjects would scream, "Hooray, King Begonia!" And that's where we are. Where we are.
That's where we were back in the 1950s when the government could wave communists at us, and you know we would throw our children and our money at them. But you see, we've reached the point now where we're beginning to realize the biggest enemy of the people is the government itself, and we're starting to dig our heels in and say no more. And that's why Schwarzenegger is coming up with this whole big scary thing about all these services are going to be cut. And as I pointed out, if they cancel all these programs, they're going to put a lot more Californians out of work, and that's just going to accelerate the decline. And you know, like I said, we need to look at, you know, first of all, you know, California's debts began back with the Enron scandal. And Schwarzenegger, if he had not written off that $9 billion that Enron was supposed to return to California, they would not have had to borrow money to meet their shortfalls. And it's the accumulating interest on all that $8 billion plus borrowing that has, you know, coupled with the economic downturn, has created this crisis situation. The bottom line is the spending has to be cut. And let's start with the legislature's salaries, and let's take a good look at their expense accounts and take a good look at some of these high-level salaries throughout the California government itself.
Well,
and
the trillions of federal debt that just keeps expanding day by day that can never be paid off.
Well, that's a big problem, and that is owed to the Federal Reserve, and I think at some point, you know, we're on our way to a conflict. It's, you know, we're heading literally to a war between the Federal Reserve bankers who have concocted this idea that we owe them, you know, $50-60 trillion, and the American people saying we never agreed to that and we're not going to have it taken from us. And it's
well,
going to come.
Your listeners need to watch. Most of them have probably seen this, but it this lays it out better than anything I've ever seen. I knew this in the 70s because my dad was a big Republican. He told me all about why Kennedy was killed and the Federal Reserve and the trilateralists. There's a film called Freedom to Fascism by Aaron Rizzo.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It lays it out better than anything else. And then to further detail why Kennedy was killed, all you have to do is look at the coinage. One of the last executive orders was to print $4 billion worth of silver certificates. They kill him in 63. Whose face was on the half dollar in 63? Benjamin Franklin. The minute they kill him in 64, they put his face on a half dollar. 1964.
Thomas, got to take a break here. Hold that thought. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident that the financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of the International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience and concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the cold, hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? For a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster, subscribe now at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. Experience the difference. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain investment advice tailored just for you. Don't wait another minute. Subscribe today at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America, and the phone lines are loaded up. Matt, I'm going to have you make sure that I don't miss anybody as we go through the list. We got to finish up with Thomas in Arizona. Thomas, you were talking about how the monetary system changed. Kennedy is, of course, one of the two presidents who tried to start issuing their own currency to get around the privately owned banks issuing the public money. And both of them, of course, wound up shot to death. And along with putting his face on the half dollar, which was sort of the thing to do as kind of a cenotaph along with the Apollo moon program. I think the single most telling change that this was all about money was the fact that the former chairman of the Chase Manhattan Bank, John J. McCloy, had been on the Warren Commission. And the year after Kennedy was killed, the real genuine silver coins, the coins with inherent intrinsic value, were taken out of circulation and replaced with these cheap copper slugs that we have been using ever since then. And so,
Not totally. Here's what they did to further thumb their nose at Kennedy. If you look this up, you will find that from 1965 till about 1969 or 70, they left 40% silver in only one coin, and that was the Kennedy half dollar. Everything else was zinc, copper, but they left it 40% silver to further thumb their nose at him.
Okay, I was unaware of that, and
Google it. Between 65 and it ended in 69 or 70. It was for 4 or 5 years. They left that 40% silver, and that's the only coinage that had silver in it in America after 1964. Even the half dollar was cheap metal.
I'm getting a recollection about that. That the reason
a clad coin.
Yeah, they're all clad coins now, but I think the reason they left a little silver in the half dollar was because there had been such a strong negative reaction to the clad coinage, where people were saying, you know, the money is technically worthless now. And I remember watching TV, and I was a school kid back then. I was in, I was 8 or 9 when this was all going down. But I remember seeing on TV how they were, the news media were just telling us that these new coins were perfectly okay to use, and there wasn't a problem. So there was a huge, huge stink about it at the time.
Well, Thomas, why didn't they leave the silver and the Eisenhower dollar then? Why the Kennedy coin?
Well, the only reason they created the Eisenhower dollar is because Las Vegas has all these dollar slot machines, and the real silver dollars were becoming so valuable that collectors were just taking them out of circulation. They needed a circulatable silver dollar coin that could be used in Las Vegas. That's the reason the Eisenhower dollar was brought into circulation.
Getting is they could have left silver in that and not the Kennedy coin. It was interesting they didn't leave it in the quarter, the nickel, the dime. It was only the Kennedy.
And it's not in the Kennedy anymore either. It's just completely taken
out. No, after 1970, it was gone. Yeah.
Yeah, and now copper's becoming so valuable that people are stealing that as well. Thomas, we got to let you go. We're going to switch over to, let me see if I got the list straight here, Brian in Georgia. Aloha, Brian. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hey, Mike. I was just thinking about all these, the torture scandal and the soldier suicides and that moronic comment that general made that, you will not commit suicide and that's an order, but but I wanted to try to tie
anybody trying to commit suicide will be shot.
Yeah. Anyway, I was trying to tie that back to the implications to society here. I have a cousin who was downsized in the banking industry a few years ago, and he decided to try to get into law enforcement, and every municipality where he applied, he found out that, the rule is that if you're ex-military, your application gets bumped to the top of the stack.
Yes.
And there was another incident where a friend of his was taking the physical fitness exam, and they had brought an instructor who was obviously ex-military, maybe, Green Beret or Army Ranger, something like that, and he was treating the recruits and all like it was boot camp. He was ridiculing them and calling them all these colorful expressions, And one of the recruits, said something back to him, and the instructor threw his clipboard down and got right up in this guy's face and was screaming that, I'm a better man than you are, and I've got bigger blanks than you. And even the local cops, who were kind of overseeing it, everyone, there was just this big stunned silence at this guy with this, hair trigger temper. And what I was thinking about was as these soldiers come back that have been warped by their combat experience in the Middle East, they're getting merged back into civilian society and law enforcement. And I think a lot of these incidents where we have the police reacting with deadly force in these very mundane civilian situations is, these guys are time bombs, but they're being put in law enforcement. And
I agree, and that's another reason why Americans should be opposing this torture scandal, because those torturers, they're coming home to join our police force. I mean, we saw that videotape a couple of weeks ago. Young woman gets attacked, calls 911, the police show up, mistakenly arrest her. And when she's trying to explain that they've got the victim instead of the perpetrator, they forcibly strip search her, rip her clothes off of her. Men and women, it's Abu Ghraib right there in the heartland of America.
Yeah, and I applaud that woman because she said, I want this video of what they did to me to be widely circulated,
Yes.
Even though it, probably means great embarrassment to her, but it's like Americans need to know that, these ex-military zombies are being put back in polite society, and they're turning this into a FEMA camp.
Yeah, they really are, and it's basically all they've got left is to terrorize us into simply accepting whatever the government is going to tell us. And you know something? It's ultimately going to backfire, because once a government starts using terror to control their own people, they have to keep that level of fear up, because after a while, fear is very tiring.
Yep.
Fear is very tiring. And after a while, you get so tired, you stop being afraid. And the instant you stop being afraid and you start thinking about what's going on, that's when it really all starts to come apart. I am still absolutely convinced that the future fate of the government of the United States is identical to that of the Soviet Union. I see it as already doomed. There's no real way to save it. There's no way to turn it around. It is a dead corpse looking for a place to comfortably fall down. And, you know, all of that we're seeing here, this is all symptomatic of it. You know, we've got a coffee cup around here. We sell this. This is the fastest way to bring down a dictatorship is to force them to act like one where everybody can see it. That's what's happening with these videotapes.
Yeah, and I think with the Republican Party especially, you know, they have just bet all their, they've just staked everything on the war on terror. And the more they try to rationalize this war on terror, the more ridiculous they look. I mean, here in Georgia, where I am, this Republican state legislator was sponsoring this bill to forcibly microchip, you know, implant people, you know, civilians, you know, so that I guess they could be tracked or, you know, to fight the war on terror. And he even stood up and said, you know, I would not even, he said, I would have my own children implanted first, you know, just to show how, you know.
That must be a really wonderful family to be in. Okay, Brian, we have got to let you go here. When we come back from the commercials, we'll be going with Renee and then Hans. So stick close, drink some coffee, open the window, get some fresh air. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right back to the phones. Renee, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yes. Y'all are right on target about how they'll close the things that they know the public will ill upset the public. One of the few politicians that is in jail, former Louisiana Governor Edwards, used to close the public restrooms on the interstate so people couldn't pee. I remember that. So, and if you notice on that list, they're stopping health care for women over 65 with breast or cervical cancer, but I didn't hear him say that they were stopping health care for men over 65 with prostate cancer.
You and noticed this, that, did you?
Yes, I did. And
I noticed it, too.
Well, the thing is, it's just like they'll pay for Viagra, but they won't pay for birth control. And let me tell you, this goes further, because I was a little skinny woman, and when I was pregnant, I looked like a grape that had been speared by a toothpick. And so I had some muscle damage to my stomach. And so I want, being a little vain, I wanted it fixed, okay, because it was like herniated muscle. And so I applied to my insurance company. And they told me no because it was not life-threatening. I thought, yeah. I had a friend of mine who her husband was a urologist. So I asked her, I said, does insurance pay for those penile implants? She goes, oh, yeah. I thought, that's the beyond. I called them back, and I let them know that I knew that I said, do y'all cover penile implants? They go, yes, yes, you do. I said, well, you know, that's not a life-threatening condition, and you pay for that. And I consider your refusal to pay for what I want done under the, you know, because you say it's not life-threatening to be sexist. Well, they sent it back to committee, and I got a call 3 days later. They covered it.
Well, good for you. And here's the situation. Here's the situation. You know, insurance companies will take your money and then refuse to pay it out. But very often if you push or if you get an independent adjuster, you know, you will find out that the insurance companies will sometimes cut you a little leeway rather than risk a big public stink, because the last thing they want is more bad publicity, especially right now. So a lot of times, you know, the whole point of the HMO industry is to deny you treatment under any and all possibilities. And it's bad enough you're fighting your illness or injury, and then you have to go fight the system as well to get the care that you've already paid for. I mean, my wife and I have been through this over the years. And, you know, it's just an ongoing horror story. And it is why our current medical system is so terrible. We have the most expensive medical care in the world. It is dangerously low in quality. We have a very high infant mortality rate for an industrialized nation. And yet everybody who's making money off of the system and all the politicians who are taking campaign contributions, they think it's great. You start talking about, single-payer state health care, and they say, well, that's socialist and that's communist. You don't want to do what the commies did, do you? And it's the same fear-mongering they've had before. And it's all about getting you to go along with a system whose primary objective is to harvest as much labor from you in the form of your money while giving the absolute minimum of upkeep back. That is the goal of every government on earth without exception, to extract the most work product from the people while giving back the absolute least in support and care. That's
right.
The goal.
And I know where there's tons of money, but they'll never touch it. The thing is, what it is never talked about, you know, I heard, I think it was Bob Chapman say he had a relative or friend or somebody, a police captain was retiring after 30 years with a $120,000 pension. Well, mm-hmm. You see, and what a lot of people don't realize, like you said earlier, ex-military goes into the police force, which I think should be illegal, okay? Well, so wait, they're double and triple dipping. They get the military retirement, then they work for the government, and they get that government retirement, and then some even go and work 10 years to get the 40 quarters so they can collect on Social Security, too. So while a little old woman who only worked in the private sector, and so she only gets Social Security and she's living on dog kibble, she had to pay taxes, so these people are getting very lucrative and sometimes double and triple retirement incomes. Somebody needs to start calling them on this because, you know, all these people, when they want, they always say, oh, we're public servants. We're public servants. The thing is, I told this police woman one time, I said, you know how you have to protect and serve painted on a lot of those cars? She goes, oh, yes. I said, well, y'all need to add two more words to that. And she's like, oh, really? What? I said, only ourselves.
Well, I think what they ought to paint on those cars is to protect and to serve and then add when we feel like it. Because remember, there was that lawsuit in Washington, D.C., where these women were attacked in their own home, and they called 911, and 911 said, we're coming, we're coming, we're coming, and they never showed up. And these women sued, and the courts ruled there is no actual legal requirement for the police to come save you if you're in trouble.
I know, and we know this because we hear it all the time. Honey, if the thing is, they say when they want the money and sympathy and everything else, oh, we're here to serve you. But notice the difference in treatment. If you get murdered, okay, it's like, well, you know, if they got concrete in their feet, shoot a cop and see if the lead don't fall out the back of their trousers and how fast they move and how much more efficient they are. So who are they protecting and serving? It ain't me.
Well, they're protecting and serving the money. That's their job, to go out and harvest money from us with traffic citations and to make sure that you're not bothering the banks and the stores. I mean, I'm not kidding you. There is a field station for the Honolulu Police Department right inside the shopping mall down here at the bottom of the hill. They've got their own marked police parking outside there. There is a police station in the shopping mall. In fact, they're not the only one. There's another small mall over here by the Safeway that they've got a police substation right there in the shopping mall. Forget about protect and serve the ordinary people. They're there to protect the money. They're there to make sure the money is taken care of. That's their job. That's what it's all about. All right, Renee, we got to let you go. Thanks very much for the phone call. We're going to switch over to Hans. Aloha, Hans. Sorry to keep you waiting. What's on your mind
today? How are you doing?
Doing fine.
Michael, I have a question for you. Why do they call this country the United States?
It sounds good.
Geez, you're the first guy that actually had some kind of answer, because there is nothing united here. It's the most ununited states of America.
Absolutely correct. But when they started that name, there were only 13 states, and the whole point of the Constitution and the Federalist Papers was to unite it into a confederation, and the name just stuck. But you're right. We're not very united on a lot of things. We're hearing talk of secession in a number of states now.
Well, now, here I have a story to tell you about that, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do not know what this is all about, and this is about a child support issue, and I'm not the only one. There's most likely millions of men, and some women are included. The travesty of justice that is going on, and again, you know, with the states and so forth, and I'm speaking of the country of New York. I call it that because that's what it is. That's what I think it is, to my knowledge. I used to live there. I was originally born in Germany. I'm a legal citizen, been here since 1956. My father got a job. We had a sponsor, the whole nine yards. But that's besides the point. I got the divorce. Let's put it this way. My wife committed adultery. My second wife, the first one, did the same thing, adultery. But that's neither here or there. I got the divorce. I had one son to take care of, which I've done. And I've had an attorney, a Manhattan attorney, who was a customer of mine when I was in the satellite antenna business.
Okay, Hans, you need to get to the point because we're running out of time.
Let me come to the point. The point is, okay, if one does not take care of their child support issues, okay, anywhere in the United States, the states dictate to the federal government to take out child support payments out of your Social Security and out of your unemployment payments. Did you know that?
Yes, I did know that.
And we're being held hostage, okay? I cannot get a passport, okay, unless my arrears are paid, which I've actually have done, and I don't want to get into it. I've done all that. I went through it.
All right, okay. Hans, I'm sorry. We got to let you go here, and I apologize. I've got some comment when we come back from the commercials on that subject, and then we got to wrap up the show for today. This is the What Really Happened radio show. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Last segment of our show today. This one has just gone by so fast. And thank you to everybody who called in, because you make it a much more interesting, a much more enjoyable show when you do that. Now, responding to what Hans was saying, and I understand where he's coming from, because I went through, during the dissolution of my first marriage, I got to see a lot of the court biases up close. Now, first of all, let me say up front, if you are a parent of a child, you have an obligation to that child, and you must live up to it. And that is absolutely a given here. Now, that being said, there is no question the system has been abused and biased and perverted for political reasons. And there have been some very hideous abuses of the child support system. Hans was saying that he suspected that the children he's supporting aren't even his because both of his wives were committing adultery. And I know that back during the 1990s, when issues of paternity were being raised, and even issues of rape, the National Organization of Women was lobbying against the use of DNA tests, and basically their attitude was you should take the woman's word about everything, which that trust turned out to be misplaced in a lot of cases. There were some very absurd abuses of these laws and principles, and there's also no question that in a lot of cases the courts were awarding child support and spousal support greatly in excess of what had been going on before the divorce. And a lot of it was very, almost punitive, where there just seemed to be this intent to simply punish the fathers. And for a while there, for all the kvetching that was going on about women being treated as sex objects, certainly during the 1990s and during the heyday of militant feminism, there was no question that men were being reduced to cash objects, that we were just walking ATM machines to be drawn upon with any and all excuse. And I think the most absurd case of this was a case came out of, I think it was up in San Francisco, where this man went on a one-night stand with this woman. This woman had a lesbian friend who wanted a baby but didn't want to be with a man, so they used a turkey baster to sort of move the goodies from the woman who'd been with the man to the woman who wanted the baby. She conceived and sued the man for child support, and the court gave it to her. I mean, an extreme case, but it shows just how weird the court system got. Now, for myself, my concern here in this issue, and then I want to move on because we've got some other things to talk about. The way the laws were set up in the 90s, and I think it's still pretty much the same way right now, if a woman and a man get together and the woman wants to have the baby, the man is going to be forced to pay for it no matter what his intentions were, or even if the woman tells him she was on birth control. It's no excuse. It's his kid. He's now financially responsible for it. But at the same time, the reason, you know, it's a double standard is if a man is married to a woman, and this is what I went through in my first marriage. If a man is married to a woman and he wants a family, he wants children, and he made that very clear up front before they even got married. I want a family. I want little kids. I want a dog. I want all of that stuff. And the woman, after marrying him, decides that she's not going to have kids and she gets an abortion. She doesn't need his permission. She doesn't need, you know, to tell him. And he has absolutely no legal recourse. He can't use it as a justification for a divorce. If he tries to divorce her, they'll come down on they would any other way, because there is no legal obligation for the woman to keep any of her promises in that regard. So it is a double standard. And we've got to find some balance between the two, where there, it takes two people to make a baby, and it should take two people to raise them. And unfortunately, there are too many institutions in this country that make too much money tearing marriages apart and sicking them on each other. It's like the old cockfights, where they'll take a man and a woman, they'll put steel spurs on them, throw them in a barrel, and sick them on each other and make bets on who's going to come out with most of their bodily parts intact. And it's a huge money-making business, and the people who, the divorce industry makes a lot of money, and it leaves behind all of these shattered, ruined lives, and a lot of very, very hard feelings. And this is the reason I originally got into supporting the men's movement, and from that I basically transitioned into some of this, other stuff. When I stumbled over the Vince Foster, murder, I was already predisposed to not be trusting what the government was saying. Speaking of the government, we just saw a headline here. Apparently the FBI is building a new facility out here on the island of Oahu on 10 acres. Huge, huge facility out here in Hawaii. And from which their stated intention is they're going to project their power and authority over all of the Pacific Rim. Now, I am sorry, but as I understand it, the Federal Bureau of Investigation's jurisdiction ends at the state borders. At least that's what I thought. But apparently this new 10-acre facility they're building out in Kapolei is here to extend the FBI's influence over the entire Pacific Rim. Talk about your New World Order situation. Meanwhile, during the break, somebody emailed in this chart about American coinage that had silver content. And I stand corrected, because apparently when the Eisenhower dollars were first put out from 1971 to 1976, they do contain 40% of silver. And as a result, their silver content today, they're actually worth about $5 going to the various swap meets and so forth and so on. But definitely the 100% silver coins basically ended right after the Kennedy assassination. Yes, the Kennedy half dollar from 65 to 1970 was also 40% silver. But today, all of our coinage is junk pot metal tokens. It has no intrinsic worth. Its value is only what the government and the Federal Reserve tells you it is. And that mean, and the biggest difference is when the money contained silver, when it contained metals of value, copper, nickel, silver, that value was under your control. It didn't matter what the government or the bank said, it kept the same value. With these gas station slugs that we are given for money now, we've lost control over the value of our money. The government can say it's worth more, it's worth less. The banks can say it's worth more, it's worth less. We had that in the mid-90s when the U.S. went through a major devaluation of their money, which triggered the Japanese real estate buying spree here in the United States and here in Hawaii. Because overnight, the money you had was declared by the government dictate to be worth only half as much. And, of course, the reason we're all in financial trouble right now is all the money we have, it's in our paper notes and our coins and our cookie jars and our bank accounts, it is dropping in value because it never had an intrinsic worth. There was no foundation of value to the money on which for the economy to settle down and rest. It's all make-believe numbers in computers. And these slugs have very little worth to them at all. And that's the reason the economy is as dynamic and difficult as it is. All right, we're coming down here to the end of the show. We've talked about the torture case I mentioned before, the London 7-7 bombing case. The gentleman who confessed to being the mastermind has now through his attorney come out and basically said that he was tortured into that confession. He was forced to draw the maps that were later used as evidence to say, see, they were planning this bombing, so forth and so on. So this is getting to be a very, very, very common pattern here. Now, interestingly enough, as we talk about the torture scandal, somebody has come up with a rather interesting way to sort of make this real for more Americans. By now, many of you are probably very familiar with the online gaming experience called Second Life, where you create an avatar of yourself of how you wish you looked, and you will go in and you get involved with this virtual environmental experience where you have a job, you meet people, you go out, you have fun, you try. There are businesses setting up in these places, and I know some of these actually become their own online economies, and I think EverQuest at one point had enough of an internal economic base to it to qualify as its own nation. So Second Life has now come on. That's the new one. It's a little more grounded in present-day contemporary society than EverQuest and Warcraft are. And somebody working with a grant has set up a virtual Guantanamo Bay facility in Second Life. And if you get involved in this part of the simulation, you are given an orange jumpsuit. They throw you on a cargo plane with a hood, and you basically are given this virtual treatment in Guantanamo, in Second Life. And I imagine for a lot of people it's going to be very upsetting, but you know something? It is the best way to hammer home the reality of what has been going on down there, because they're hiding the pictures. You know, and I remember, and I really should dig this out, when the Abu Ghraib scandal first broke and we began to hear about waterboarding, they tried to convince everybody that, well, they were just holding a plastic sheet over the face and pouring water on the face, and that was what was getting them to confess. We know now, of course, that was a complete lie. There'd be a porous cloth so they couldn't see the water coming, but it was going right into the nose and the throats and in the lungs, and it's simulated drowning is what it is. Anyway, that's it for our show. We'll be back here on GCN Monday at 5 p.m. Central Time here on GCN. Until then, stay safe, be well, drive carefully, hug your loved ones, and aloha, America.